It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward.
That's what I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this, the 30th episode of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show for the 2017-2018 NBA season. As always, the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show is sponsored by Greats.com, makers of the all-time greats, classic, stylish, and comfortable sneakers at a great price. I am your host, Nick Sesento, and I'll be joined very shortly by the ever-unique, well-known, illustrious James Hollis, a.k.a. Snotty Drippin, who will be joining me very shortly. The Boston Celtics came into this game having dropped two of their previous three games, kind of what you could probably consider their worst stretch of the season thus far, what has been a fantastic season thus far, but probably their worst stretch of the season thus far, including an absolute embarrassment at the hands of the Chicago Bulls a couple of nights ago, 23-point loss. But the Boston Celtics bounced back tonight, getting back into the win column, defeating the Denver Nuggets by a score of 124-118, led by Kyrie Irving, who returned after missing the previous game, the previous aforementioned debacle in Chicago, by scoring 33 points and 7 assists on a very efficient 12-for-19 shooting. After, like I said, missing the Bulls debacle a couple of nights ago. In addition, Jaylen Brown, having finally ditched his Horace Grant-style goggles, his shades, came back with a equally impressive 26.5 rebound performance on an efficient 9-for-12 shooting. The Celtics overall shot just under 60%, 59.5% from the field, to be exact, against a Denver Nuggets team that actually came into this game ranked 5th place in a very tough Western Conference with a 15-12 record, now 15-13. Tough game. Wasn't going to be easy from the start. Both Gary Harris, who, I mean, unless you follow the Denver Nuggets, I mean, Gary Harris is not, unless you're, like, really into following every single NBA team, Gary Harris is not somebody that was really on my radar, but Gary Harris lit the Boston Celtics defense up for 36 points, along with second-year player Jamal Murray. I believe he was drafted in the same draft as our very own Jaylen Brown, who contributed 28 points for the Denver Nuggets. To make this a fairly interesting game, the Boston Celtics controlled the game for controlled the pace, controlled the score for most of the game, outscoring the Nuggets in, let's say, two of the four quarters. But the Denver Nuggets, after falling down by double figures, I believe, in the fourth quarter, fought back to make the game interesting towards the end, but eventually falling to the Boston Celtics by 6 points again by a score of 124-118. Fantastic performances by the Boston Celtics. Had 5 players in double figures. Again, Kyrie Irving, 33 points in his return to the Boston Celtics after a thigh injury that kept him out the previous game. Aaron Baines, fantastic performance, 17 points and 6 rebounds. 5 players from the Boston Celtics scored in double figures. I think it was an all-around solid game. Every Boston Celtic that got into the game scored, with the exception of Semi Ojeleye, who saw extended minutes but did a fairly decent job on defense, did his job filling in for some of the players that were out. Marcus Morris continues to be out for the long term with, I believe it's an ankle or knee injury. Al Horford, who probably should have sat out the Chicago game after sustaining a leg injury of his own, actually didn't play tonight, with Marcus Smart being inserted into the lineup in his place and Jason Tatum moving up to the small ball four position alongside Aaron Baines, who played the center. Spotty, I'm going to bring you in here. I think that's about enough of a synopsis as you're going to get out of me, or as good of a synopsis as you're going to get out of me on this short notice hosting duties. What did you see about this game? What about this game impressed you, or what about this game disappointed you after seeing the tragedy of, what was it, Monday night's game with the Bulls and the bounce back that the Boston Celtics showed tonight?
Yeah, so I think for the Celtics right now, they're already entering that kind of dog day of the season thing where the Bulls game was their first real dud, and tonight was kind of a slog, too. It was a chore. The bench really stepped in. Shane Larkin deserves big kudos. He didn't miss a shot from the field, 6 for 6. Some big shots when we needed it. Like, Boston was, you know, down, or there was floundering on offense, and Larkin provided a really big spark, especially in the second half. He came up with a big steal and a layup. Then I think he had a strip the next time down, too. So on both sides of the ball, Larkin was like the difference maker. Also, like you said, Jaylen Brown, he had been – not really ever since, he had the issue, the personal issue with his friend passing, and he had that one big game. But since then, he'd been really kind of subdued. And so this was his first real breakout game. And it was also one of the first games where Tatum and Brown both had, sometimes it seems to me like Brown have a good game, and then Tatum will kind of just be in the background, and Tatum will have a good game, and Brown will be in the background. This is one of the first games in a while that they both stepped up. Tatum late hit a couple of nice shots, and obviously he's really steady offensively. His incredible 3-point shooting continues. He made the only three he took, but Brown, I think, was a real difference maker. It was funny watching the broadcast because Tommy tried to get on Brown's case for hitting a late three, but you know the game was still in balance. And instead of just holding the ball and taking the big man, he shot a three and made it in his face. So it was, it's a good game to win. It's one of those games. If they had lost it, we'd have been really hard on them criticizing. They did give up a lot of points late because I think they were up like 12 late. And all of a sudden, my guy, Gary Harris, caught fire. And like, he was good all game, but he was unstoppable in the closing minutes as they were trying to scrape back into the game. Like, him and Jamal Murray were hitting everything. There's that one play where Brown was guarding him on the wing, and he had him bottled up. And he just does this little spin move. He somehow split two defenders, gets fouled as he, you know, hits his crazy reverse. So it was his night. He ended up 16 for 25 from the floor. And in a game that his team lost by 6, he was plus 12. You know what I mean? Jamal Murray was plus 8. So those two guards were Boston couldn't get a handle on them. Combined for 64 points, you know, and 7 made threes. That's pretty potent. And so I guess Boston's kind of lucky that Jokic didn't play tonight and they're not full strength, because this would have been a lot to handle.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. It definitely seemed to be a bit of a chore. Looking at the game before the game started and looking at, the records and kind of, prepping for the show after I was informed that I'd be helping you co-host Snotty, I kind of looked at it and I was like, damn, the Denver Nuggets, they're in fifth place in the Western Conference. I mean, not something that I would have expected. I didn't expect the Denver Nuggets to be quite this good. I'm looking at the box score, and I don't even see does Paul Millsap even still play for the Denver Nuggets? Is he injured? Is he not?
He's hurt, man. He had surgery on his, I think, hand or wrist. He hurt his wrist, and then Jokic's just coming back from his injury. So, like, they're missing their two main guys. So this is like they have to put up a really good fight.
Yeah, and they certainly got a fantastic game from your man Gary Harris and Jamal Murray. But the Boston Celtics were able to weather that. I mean, on any other night, if you look at the Denver Nuggets box score, they shot almost 50% from the field. And on any other night, when a team shoots 50% from the field, it's usually not a good sign. It usually means that, you know, there's some breakdowns on defense. 50% for team shooting is a pretty good percent, but If you're gonna shoot 60% from the field, including 44% from three, which the Boston Celtics did, I mean, it doesn't matter what the other team shoots unless they're shooting 70%, because those are insane stats for a team shooting. 60% from the field and 44% from three, just fantastic. This is also one of those games, even without Jokic and even without Paul Millsap, guys, they can, you know, they can grab rebounds. The Boston Celtics got, you know, dramatically out-rebounded in this game, 48-30 on the glass, out-rebounded by 18 boards by the Denver Nuggets. I think that was a key factor in the Denver Nuggets, you know, really, you know, hanging into this game. They won the first quarter, 31-30. The Boston Celtics then went on their run to go into the half by 9 points. Then the Denver Nuggets, you know, fought back, you know, a little bit in the third quarter, and then it was kind of a wash in the fourth quarter, kind of by the end of the game after the Denver Nuggets made their little run there towards the end of the fourth quarter. A couple of three-pointers, hit some free throws, and got the game a little bit tighter after going down by, I believe it was double figures. I'm not positive, but I believe they did go down by double figures or were down by double figures at some point in the fourth quarter. They fought back, and, you know, it's just a testament to the Boston Celtics. They did not want to lose this game after the stinker they dropped in Chicago a couple of nights ago. They definitely, especially with Kyrie Irving coming back and Al Horford out, they definitely needed to get this win to get, you know, back into the win column and to kind of get off that snide. And it's interesting, Snotty, that we discussed the last time we were on the show together when we had kind of a round table discussion with Josue Pavone, who joined us a little bit late after some technical difficulties with the Blog Talk interface, that we had a discussion. We discussed this very issue about a stretch that the Boston Celtics may encounter in which they may drop, you know, a couple of games and may go through a stretch where they come back down to earth a little bit and don't, you know, and don't continue to, you know, follow this the red hot streak that they had been on. And I think that, you know, I was the one that came out and said, I don't see it on the schedule. They play the Bulls twice. There really isn't a long stretch of games or several games in a row where, you know, it looks like the Boston Celtics are going to drop a significant number of games. But I think you're absolutely right in what you just said and what you had said the other night when we were hosting together, in that the Boston Celtics were primed for a little bit of, you know, some you know, gravity hitting them and bringing them back down to earth and, you know, dropping a couple of games. And that Chicago Bulls game, where, you know, you would have expected would have been an easy W, and they play the Bulls two times in this stretch of, I believe it's, what, 12 games and 18 nights or something like that. They play the Bulls twice, and it just seems since last season the Bulls have, you know, put in work on the Boston Celtics, given the Boston Celtics trouble. And looking at this game, even without Jokic and even without Paul Millsap, the Denver Nuggets still gave the Boston Celtics, you know, a bit of some troublesome tonight, especially with Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, you know, lighting up the Boston Celtics backcourt.
Well, you know, I'm looking at some numbers since the streak ended, right? That's why my line of demarcation where everything is. Before the streak, Boston had, like, the best defense in the league by far, right? They had almost defending at an almost historic level as far as defensive rating was concerned, right? I mean, how many points per 100 possession they gave up. Well, since that streak, right, I think I asked you guys this last time too. So since November 22nd, yep, Boston played 12 games. They're 8-4, which isn't terrible, but, you know, I mean, you win 16 in a row. So it's not terrible. That was a bad loss to the Bulls. So take, as I said, we didn't lose the Bulls, right? And they're 9-3. It looks a little different. So it's not that big a deal. Where do you think they rank in the league defensive rating wise in those 12 games?
In those 12 games, well, if it's the same as the answer that you gave last time, because I know that Josue and I both guessed wrong. I believe I guessed 10th, and Josue guessed 7th. And I believe you told us that the defensive rating for the Boston Celtics in those 12 games since the win streak, the 16-game win streak ended, had dropped down to 13th in team defense.
They were 13th.
And I'm gonna go ahead and guess that you're gonna tell me they've dropped even further down now, because, I mean, looking at the score tonight, this is not an overtime game. This is just a game that ended in regulation, but they let the Denver Nuggets, without two of their better players, drop 118 on them. And of course the loss to the Chicago Bulls, which is a complete, you know, route, you know, high scoring route at that, I can imagine that they've dropped even further. So what is their defensive rating? Because I don't have any idea. I'm not going to Google it, because I know that you already know. You wouldn't have asked
I got it right
if you didn't already know, so I'm just going to go straight to you with that. And what is their defensive rating now?
So I'm just before I give the bad news, on the positive tip, they're up to 9th in offensive rating, which is, you know, I think last time they were like 12th or 11th. They and they're, I think, they're as far as you go, like effective field goal percentage and true shooting percentage, they're top 7 in the league. These are good things. These are good points as far as the offense being a lot better. All right, now here's some bad news. Rebounding percentage. Boston was one of the best rebounding teams in the league during that streak up until that streak ended. And since that streak ended, Boston is 27th in rebounding percentage. So, again, now, yeah, the problems from last season are rearing their heads. They're only grabbing – oh, my goodness, yeah. They're grabbing 48% of available rebounds, and, you know, that's 27th in the league. The best teams in the league, Philly is grabbing 55%. Oklahoma City Thunder is grabbing 54%. Those are the best. So we're getting beat up on the boards, and then defensive rating-wise, Golden State's still number one. San Antonio's number two. Dallas is number three, and 19th. Boston's 19th in the league defensive rating.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so in the past couple of days since the last time we spoke, Snotty, since the last time we co-hosted a show together, the Boston Celtics, well, let's just put it from the broader picture. The Boston Celtics went from being ranked first in the league in team defense during their 16-game win streak. And then, of course, the line of demarcation that you just mentioned, the last time we spoke, they dropped down to 13th in 13th. Team defense. Yeah. And now you're telling me they're down to what, to 23rd?
No, now they're 19th in defensive rating.
19th, that's what you had. 19th. That's a pretty significant drop if you look at it big picture.
It
I mean, it's been a pretty precipitative, you know, fall from, you know, being the top defense in the league and being one of the best rebounding teams in the league to now being, you know, one of the. Let's just say if you're 19th in defense and there's only 30 teams in the league, then you're obviously on the worst half, you know, the bottom half of team defenses. They're not grabbing those rebounds, but like you said, at least the bright side, the offense has stepped up. You'd like to hope though that, you know, at some point in the season, and the season is still young, haven't even hit the midway point. You'd like to hope at some point that the Boston Celtics, and of course, you know, you have to factor in for some of the injuries, have to factor in for the fact that Horford wasn't in tonight. One game wasn't going to change anything. But you'd like to hope that everybody, you know, when everybody is healthy, or hopefully everybody can get healthy heading towards the playoff after the All-Star break, that they can start putting it all together. You know what I mean? Having, if not a top-ranked offense, but, you know, a top-10 offense and a top-10 defense at the same time. Because I think if they can do that, that puts them in fantastic shape going into the playoffs, you know, with clearly their only, you know what I mean, significant hurdle or significant challenge for contention being the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that's not to short the Washington Wizards or the Toronto Raptors or any of the other – the Detroit Pistons who have kind of stumbled a little bit also. That's not to short any of them. But I think that, you know, the Boston Celtics, they're going to have to do both. And I know it's difficult to do both. It's difficult to get down, to you know, sit down and squat down and get, you know, play that defense and then at the same time have that energy on offense and score. But, you know, winning teams do that. Those teams from the Kevin Garnett era and the Paul Pierce era, the previous Big Three era, they were teams that scored a lot of points and also held teams, you know, to low outputs on the defensive end. The Boston Celtics are going to have to learn how to balance out and do both at some point here moving forward. But, you know, there's injuries, there's other things going on. It's still early in the season, and I think Brad Stevens is still learning to adjust. He's still playing some of these young guys like Shemmy, guys like, you know, and I love Shane Larkin, you know, he's still integrating some of these players. Daniel Tice, who I think had a fantastic game tonight, 8 points, 3 rebounds, a steal, and plus 14 in the plus-minus. For those that like plus-minus, I'm not a big fan, but I know some people like plus-minus. I think Brad Stevens is still...
Let me ask you, man. Let me ask you, why don't you like plus? Why don't you like plus-minus?
It's not that I don't like plus minus, and I know we've had this discussion before that, you know, you can take – I like plus minus from the broad view, that if you take plus minus, you know, over – you know, if from just one game, I don't think you can really extrapolate all that much, because you can look at some games where there's a player that scores 0 points and has three turnovers and shoots zero for nine. Like, say, for example, a game like Marcus Smart might have, but still be plus 15 or something in the box score. And to me, that indicates a player that's, you know, this and I'm not criticizing Marcus Smart, just an example, but a player, a generic player, who happens to play a lot with the starting players and happens to play at a time when, you know, he may not be that productive. But the rest of the players on the court with him are being productive. But I agree with you in the discussion that we had previously that the long view, the broad view, that if there is consistent, you know, if you're consistently a plus in the plus minus, then yeah, you can extrapolate, you can deduce certain things from that. But I think on an individual game basis, I'm just not a huge fan of that, because obviously basketball is a team sport, and it really depends a lot on, you know, especially in a Brad Stevens system, it really depends a lot on who you're on the court with and who you're playing with and what their strengths and weaknesses are.
Well, let me ask you this, though. If a guy is 0 for 6 with 4 turnovers, he's not staying on the – and he's just a bit player, he's not going to stay on the court with the best players. They're going to pull him, right? So then that guy won't be on the court long enough to really – after, like, you know, those 3 or 4 possessions over, like, all right, you're out of here. I get it, but that's it's a philosophical difference, because, like, to me,
unless
it,
your name
it
is
really
Marcus
does.
Smart.
And see, that's my thing. Like, it shows that you're doing so much other things that matter. That sure, I mean, and that's the problem with looking at just box scores and saying, oh, this guy was 0-for-4, and had 2 turnovers. He had a bad game. No, and you know, he had 4 points and 2 turnovers. He must have had a good game. Well, we see that's Marcus Smart's the perfect person that you brought him up. He shows you that, no, because you can play excellent defense. You can make a bunch of hockey assists. You know, you can disrupt passes without getting steals. And, you know, you tip the ball and your guys get it. So you can have a great game without really filling up the box score. You know what I'm saying? So I get it, though. I get it. It can be a noisy stat.
Yeah, definitely a noisy stat, a stat that's up for interpretation. And just by comparison, just to bring this up, the players that led the Boston Celtics tonight in plus minus were Daniel Tice, Vanilla Tice, with his plus 14 in the plus minus, and Shane Larkin, who did, both of whom deserved it, who also had plus 14 in the plus minus. And guess who was who had the worst plus minus on the team, or amongst the worst plus minus in the team? Aaron Baines was a negative 6, and Kyrie Irving was a negative 5, and both of those players contributed substantially more than I think Shane Larkin and Daniel Tice, when you look at everything else, not just the box score, when you also look at their performances on the court. I mean, I don't see how, you know, if plus minus were in, and I'm not saying that you're saying this because you aren't, you obviously said that it's a noisy stat, but to take plus minus at face value, which I don't think you're doing, I don't think most people do, to have a player that scores 33 points and drops 7 assists on 12 for 19 shooting and 4 for 9 from 3 to be negative 5 in the plus minus, while a guy that goes 2 for 4 from the field, 0 for 1 from 3 and scores 8 points is plus 14. I mean, that shows you that plus minus is, you know, there's more than just, you know, the raw plus minus to look at.
That's where, you know, you watched the game too and you saw it, but that's where, I mean, sure, Kyrie had 33, but he gave up 36. To Gary Harris. You know what I'm saying? Like, or, you know, 28 to Jamal Murray. I really want to say it. Yeah, I mean, I watched the game, and, yeah, there were stretches where, excuse me, the starters couldn't stop anybody. So guess what? The bench came in, and Shane Larkin had 14 points, but they made a lot of headway, and they actually pushed that lead up. And then the starters came back in, and guess what? They lost that lead a lot towards the end of the game. That's how you get a negative plus minus, even if you score 33 and your team wins. You know what I mean? So to me, that makes sense. The team seemed like, sure, you know, it's only for in a small spurt, but Larkin and Tice led, like, opened up that lead and kind of stabilized when things were getting kind of dicey. So I get it, though, but it's a noisy stat. And I was going to say, just shifting gears, coming into tonight, Jaylen Brown in his last 7 games was averaging only 11 points. On the season, he's averaging about 15 a game. Coming into this game over his last 7 games, right, he missed time to go and take care of his personal stuff with his best friend's passing. He came back. He's averaging 11 points a game, shooting 45%, but only 13% from 3. So he wasn't, you know, he was out there, and he was a negative. His plus minus was negative every night, like just under, you know, 0, like negative 0.4. So he'd been kind of struggling. So tonight was a real breakout game, even though his last 3 games wasn't terrible. He had 13 against the Bulls, right? And that's the Bulls team that you're supposed to beat, and your guys step up against it. He only had 13. So that's kind of like, you know, it wasn't troublesome, but you want more out of Jaylen. So tonight was a really positive step, I think, for Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, and we had this discussion last night, Bobby Manning and I, after the not last night, but Monday night after the Chicago Bulls game. I mean, it's tough trying to make an interesting show out of a shit show like we saw on the court against the Bulls at the United Center on Monday night. But we went into the Jaylen Brown discussion and talked about Jaylen Brown. And Bobby Manning mentioned, you know, that Jaylen Brown was kind of struggling, didn't have, you know, a performance, you know, that was up to par with what we really expect out of him. With, I think he had 13 points in that game and something like 5 or 6 rebounds. And my response to that was, and that's not to take anything away from Bobby Manning, because, yeah, we do now. We have expectations of Jaylen Brown now, seeing what he can do. But it's really a testament to how much he's improved, what a massive step he's taken from his rookie season last year, where I believe he averaged something like 6 points and 2 rebounds or something like that, to where he is now, that he can have a 13-point and 5-rebound game or 13-point and 6 boards or whatever his stat line was against Chicago, and we say, Jaylen Brown just kind of was off, you know, tonight. Jaylen Brown didn't have that great of a game. When we can say, as Boston Celtics fans, that Jaylen Brown is not having a great game, is not playing up to his potential, is not having, you know, the greatest of games with 13 points and 6 boards, that's just really a testament to how much Jaylen Brown has grown and how much his game has improved from last year to this year. And I think this game, while I don't expect him to, you know, to shoot 9 for 12 from the field, 3 for 4 from 3, and score 26 points and 5 rebounds and assist and 2 steals, a block. I mean, he filled the entire box score up. He filled that whole thing up. But I mean, it just shows you how much he's improved. And as I was saying, we don't expect him to score 26 points every night, and we don't expect him to do so on such efficient scoring with the field goal shooting, efficient scoring from the three-point line. But I think Jaylen Brown is bound for this territory. I don't know if he's going to be if he's going to have a season at some point where he averages 26 points a game, but I think that in the very near future, we can expect to see Jaylen Brown averaging 20 points a game, 6 boards, you know what I mean, and an assist. Passing really isn't his thing. His handles aren't all that fantastic, although he did have a couple of moments in tonight's game where he, you know, put the ball on the ground and dribbled around a few people and scored some pretty solid baskets. His handling just is probably the one area of his game that I think a lot of Celtics fans would like to see him improve upon, but Jaylen Brown, putting up those stats, he had a fantastic game tonight, a real bounce-back game that I think a lot of people wanted to see from him. And as you mentioned, it kind of seems like those two kind of bounce, you know, back and forth off each other. There's kind of, Jaylen Brown scores and has a decent, you know, stretch, and then Jason Tatum has a decent stretch. And tonight was one of those games where I think they both really played their positions very well and played off each other well and were integrated very well into the offense and played reasonably well defensively. I mean, getting back to the defensive point where you mentioned Kyrie and whoever else giving up those massive stats to Gary Harris and Jamal Murray. I think at some point you got to put some of that also on Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier, and that they also, you know what I mean, allowed a lot of those points from Gary Harris and Jamal Murray. I think nobody in the backcourt was really putting much of clamps on either of those guys. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot to be, you know, to be deduced from this type of game. I'd like to see, you know, more of the stretch as the Boston Celtics go forward with more of their, you know, 12 games in 18 nights to see how this pans out. If this is going to be, you know, win two, lose one, you know, win a couple and then lose one, I'd like to see them, you know, get back onto their, you know, their winning streak, maybe win, you know, another 4 games in a row, another 5 games in a row, and not kind of, you know, win one and drop one, because the way the Cleveland Cavaliers are playing now, you know, winning one or winning two and then dropping one, you know, that's not going to keep them at the top of the Eastern Conference. And I think if they're going to have any chance with the roster that they have now. And I know you think, I know your opinion is that they're playing with house money, that there's, you know, no expectations this season because next season is it. I think a lot of fans do have expectations, and if they're going to have any chance moving forward, they really need to get that home court, I was going to say home field, but that, I'm thinking of the Patriots-Steelers game that's coming up next Sunday. But if they're going to have any chance to do anything in the playoffs, any chance of possibly overachieving and, you know, getting to that next level, they really need that home court advantage against a team like the Cleveland Cavaliers, and even against other teams like the Raptors and the Wizards, given the, you know, the loss of Gordon Hayward, given the somewhat, I would say, lack of depth, at least lack of experience in the depth that they have, because it's a lot of second-year, a lot of rookies and a lot of second-year players on this team. And as we saw with against the Chicago Bulls, sometimes they just don't step up. They just don't get it done. They just can't handle, you know, what's happening. So I'd like to see the Boston Celtics get back to the, maybe not to the 16-game winning streak. I don't think they're going to have another 16-game winning streak. Probably won't have another 10-game winning streak this season. But I'd like to see them not do this, you know, win one, lose one thing that they've been doing for the past, you know, couple of weeks now. And I think that a major part of that is going to be incumbent upon guys like Jaylen Brown having big games, not necessarily as big as the game that he had tonight, but having big games, and also getting them back healthy, getting Al Horford back, and not letting him insist on playing when he's really not ready to play, as he wasn't against the Chicago Bulls. But, I mean, a win is a win. And, you know, consider this a start to the next win streak, I hope.
This is already
and with
that
we'd like to remind everybody, Snotty, is that you? Did you get back in there?
Yeah, man. I was just saying that I thought that the Denver game was already – it was like scheduled rest for Al from, like, a while back. I don't think this – so you think he's injured?
Well, I know that he was listed as a game-time decision going into the Chicago Bulls game with a – I believe it was a knee injury. I think it was Kyrie with the thigh, Marcus with a knee or an ankle. I'm not sure about Marcus Morris, other than I know that he's out for the foreseeable future. And that Al Horford was listed as questionable for the Chicago Bulls game, for that game. And from the reports that I heard, at least according to Bobby Manning as we were discussing it on the show, that Al Horford pretty much insisted that he wanted to play. I think if there was going to be a scheduled rest, that should have been the game to rest him. Although Kyrie Irving had his scheduled rest or had his injury or whatever it was that happened, and he sat out, and maybe the decision was, you know, we're not going to sit everybody because Marcus Morris is out, Kyrie Irving is out, let's not sit Al Horford. But I think that probably would have been the better game, just to take a flyer on that one and let the young kids, you know, do their thing on that game as opposed to sitting out this one. So I genuinely do think, I think that Al Horford probably had something, you know, lingering or something nagging. I don't think it's serious. There's no indication that it's serious. But, yeah, I do think that it was probably an injury-related thing. Maybe half rest, half injury. Maybe, you know, seeing what happened in Chicago, you know, Brad Stevens said, listen, we got to get you, you know, we're going to rotate you out. Kyrie missed, you know, the Bulls game. Now Al Horford, it's your turn to sit out, because, you know, playing against a team like the Nuggets, both of those guys can't sit out. It wouldn't have been a pretty situation tonight if both Kyrie Irving and Al Horford and Kyrie Irving were sitting out. I don't think that would have worked out to the Celtics' advantage. But like I said, you never know. The Boston Celtics got the win. Jaylen Brown stepped up. Shane Larkin, like you mentioned, love the kid, man. How can you not love Shane Larkin and the energy that he brings to the Boston Celtics and the efficiency, especially tonight? What did he shoot again from the field? 6 for 6 from the field for his 14 points?
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible for somebody that's at the back of the bench that doesn't even play every single game.
Yeah, man. So, like, I don't know. We see things so different, man. I don't care about the Bulls' loss because those happen, right? And I'm looking at it, the Bulls just won again. They just won their fourth in a row tonight. They beat Utah,
yep.
And I think over that time they've been like the best defensive team in the league in the last 4 or 5 games. So it's funny how, like, look, man. It's like we can't factor in. You know, we think we know so much about the NBA. As everybody, all the people talk about it, but like chemistry is such a major thing, and somehow Mirotić came back even after the Bobby Portis fight, and that team is gelling, and Chris Dunn has confidence, and they're actually a team that looks not bad right now, which is crazy. So Yeah, man. I'm with you, though. Al Horford, if he's hurt, they have to sit him down. And that's still the coach's call. So, you know, I get it. If coach saw fit to let – I'm not questioning Brad Stevens at all. If Stevens says he could play against Chicago, then guess what? He could play against Chicago. So, yeah, man, again, my expectation of this team to play hard, and they're going to – I know for a fact, no matter what happens in the postseason, they could lose in the first round. We will never say this team didn't try. We'll never say that Stevens made some mistake.
Oh, no,
and that's – You know, so that's where I'm at with it. You're saying that people should have these. No, this is what it is, right? Kyrie's a great player. He's an excellent player. Al Horford's an excellent player. When you get in a playoff series and LeBron James is going for 40 a night, there's only so much you can do. And we're missing our max contract free agent. There's only so much you can do. You know what I mean? So that's why I'm not stressing anything that I'm seeing this year, and I'm excited about next year, especially when that pick we might end up with a Mo Bamba or a. Or DeAndre Ayton, you know, a giant in the middle. Let's talk about Denver for a minute because, like, even though Jokic was available tonight, I heard he was available tonight and they didn't play him. So they've been struggling. I think they've lost. What's the record? I don't know. They've been struggling since what's his name went down. Paul Millsap, who I thought was their best player. I guess they're not struggling that badly. Actually, I'm looking at their. Yeah, all right. So they lost tonight, but they beat Detroit. Lost to Indiana. No, so they've been treading water over there. Denver has a lot of young talent, man. They're going to be good. They're going to be really good.
They were fifth in the Western Conference coming into this game. I mean, they weren't terrible. And I don't disagree with you about Paul Millsap being their best player. I think it's interesting that they sat Jokic because they clearly made the decision that they had Jokic and they had Nurkic and they weren't going to play both of them. There wasn't enough minutes, I guess, for the two. Where I don't even know where these guys are from. Are they both Serbian players? I think they sound like Serbian surnames to me. But they had Nurkic and Jokic. They traded Nurkic away for one of the Plumlee brothers, don't know which was it, Mason Plumlee, is that the one, that Miles Mason, whichever one of the Plumlees, who also had a good game tonight against the Celtics, 15 points and 6 rebounds. But it's interesting that they sat Jokic because they clearly, I think that move trading Nurkic for Plumlee was clearly, you know, with the knowledge that, you know, Jokic was their guy, was the guy they wanted to have in the middle for them in the future. And if he was a healthy scratch for tonight, that's kind of, you know, a head scratcher for me as a Boston Celtics, you know, podcast analyst, if you want to call me that, or analyst, whatever. That's kind of a head scratcher for me that they wouldn't play a guy like that who can clearly, you know, cause matchup problems with a Boston Celtics team that is missing their best big man in Al Horford, and, you know, and isn't known for, you know, having that, you know, that quality type of, you know, a big man play up front. As much as I love Aaron Baines, you know, and he had that fantastic game neutralizing Andre Drummond, you just think that they would have used Jokic, but I don't know. I can't confirm that. Enough hours in the day for me to follow every single NBA team, so I don't follow the Denver Nuggets. It's just not a team that I like all that much. I loved them when they had Dikembe Mutombo when I was a little kid. Dikembe was my favorite when I was a kid, when I thought I was going to grow to be 7 feet tall and be able to wag my finger at people. But since watching Dikembe Mutombo crying on the court after beating the Seattle Supersonics in the playoffs when I was barely old enough to understand basketball, I haven't really paid much attention to the Denver Nuggets. I'm lying. I liked Mahmoud Abdul-Raouf as well. I really liked him. The Colin Kaepernick before there was Colin Kaepernick. I love Mahmoud Abdul-Raouf, a.k.a. Chris Jackson, a.k.a. I'm not standing for your for your national anthem. But that's a different topic. I just don't follow them, so I don't know. I can't confirm or deny, but it would be a head-scratcher to me that the Denver Nuggets would not play Jokic if he were healthy.
Nah, he was I'm looking at it right now. He did not play coach's decision. But, you know, this would have been his first game back, and I guess, you know, it's a long season, man. So, like you said, how they should have sat Al Horford against the Bulls if he wasn't ready to roll. Same thing. I guess they're just being cautious, taking the time with it. Like, some of these, like, I guess this, maybe they consider the Celtics game a schedule loss, meaning that, you know, hey, Boston's probably going to beat us anyway. We don't want to put him out there. So, I can't call it, but I do know when he's on the court, that, you know, he changes the whole complexion, and That would have been interesting to see because I don't think Boston had anyone who could guard him tonight, even though Baines is big and physical. He likes to step out that free throw line, elbow extended, and operate. You know, he can shoot. He can pass from there. He would have picked Boston apart with his passes. Gary Harris loved to go backdoor, and him and Jamal Murray loved to go backdoor, and just, you know, they run some really, really nifty stuff in Denver. So, I mean, hey, Boston will take the win. And like you said, hopefully this is the start of a new winning streak. But it was a good win, and these are the kind of games, right, that kind of test a team's fortitude. It's December, you know, these guys are tired, they're on a road trip, and they came up big, man. And that's where Boston's, I think, throughout the season, Boston's depth is going to really pay dividends. Like right now, Yabusele, I wanted to see Yabusele tonight. I'm always disappointed when I don't get to see Dancing Bear, but that's fine.
Right.
I think the speed of the NBA was a little too much for him early. And, you know, they're taking it slow with him. So that's not a big deal. But, yeah, man, we got guys who barely play, and we could dust them off, and they'll come in and give you 15, 20 minutes and be productive. And that's going to save a lot of wear and tear on the big guns, you know, because we know that Tatum's going to get big minutes. We know that Brown getting big minutes. We know that Kyrie and Al Horford are playing big minutes. We got to, you know, throughout the season, I think as the season goes on, we're going to start seeing – hopefully they got rest days built in, and other guys will take those guys' minutes. And, we'll keep them healthy. We want to keep them healthy and upright.
Yeah, and rest games, especially during stretches like this, I don't think they'll have another stretch like this in the season where they play, and I've mentioned it, I think, now five times. It sounds like I'm a broken record. The 12 games in 18 days, I mean, I don't – as Bobby said the other night that there's – I don't remember how many games he said where there's, you know, where there's I don't think there's any games he said where there's more than a day of rest in between in those games. So I mean there's a couple of back-to-backs in there, and there's, you know, no more than, you know, one day of rest, which is really not that much of a rest, because when you're playing on the road or you're flying back and forth, I mean it's really just turnaround that day in the middle, that middle day in between games, like yesterday would be the, you know, the middle game or the middle day between the game on Monday night and the game tonight is really a day of travel and, you know, getting back in there. There's not much there. So, you know, you could be right about a day of scheduled rest for Al Horford. This was Al Horford's scheduled rest, and Monday might have been Kyrie Irving's scheduled rest, because Kyrie Irving sure didn't look all that injured to me tonight. He sure showed out tonight. So, I don't know, maybe that's what Brad Stevens is doing. Brad Stevens, as we know, and I think you've mentioned it several times on the show, Bobby Manning has mentioned it several times on the show, that Brad Stevens has done a fantastic job this season of managing his players' minutes, of keeping his, you know, key guys, even the young guys who have the stamina, who have the legs, who have the, you know, the ability to, you know, to play, you know, extended minutes, keeping most of them, you know, around the 30-minute mark or just under the 30-minute mark, and not pushing them, you know, up to the, you know, 36, 38, 40 minutes that a lot of teams, you know, do. You look at, you know, some of the, you know, stuff that's happening in Cleveland. They're busting a lot of those players, and a lot of those players are getting, you know, run down early. You can't. If you want to make an extended run in today's NBA, you have to have those, you know, that those like you said, scheduled rest games, and you have to monitor their minutes. And it's just how you do it that can, you know, that can in many situations determine whether, you know, how your season pans out, can determine how a game pans out, you know, can determine how, you know, how a team does. And Brad Stevens is fantastic at managing those minutes. So if, you know, taking that L against Chicago, like you said, those games happen. And the Boston Celtics didn't have a game like that the entire season. I mean, that was literally their first horrible game, their first game where they really, you know what I'm saying, ate shit. And so that's going to happen. It happens sometimes. And if, you know, that was because of a scheduled rest day for Kyrie Irving, so be it. They came back. They bounced back tonight against the Denver Nuggets. And I wouldn't be, you know, surprised if Brad Stevens has more rest games for a guy like Al Horford, who's the senior citizen on the team, you know, so to speak, the hyperbolic senior citizen on the team, so to speak. It wouldn't surprise me if there are more rest games, especially if they are actually nursing injuries. It's just the only issue with that, and Brad Stevens is like I mentioned, has done a fantastic job of, you know, of monitoring those minutes thus far. But when you have injuries to key players, the key role players like Marcus Morris, they're keeping them out of the rotation for extended periods of time. It's, you know, it really takes talent, and it really takes being diligent, really takes the scouting report to figure out who's going to sit and when. And Brad Stevens so far has done a good job. So, you know, one bad game, one you know, just embarrassing game in Chicago is not going to make me question it. And, you know, these fluctuations in statistics as well, as much as I'd like to see the Boston Celtics even out, you know, I would love to see them. I wouldn't mind them, you know, not being number one in defense. I wouldn't mind them being number 10 defensively if they could, or number 10 offensively if they would just, you know, come back up to number 10 defensively. You know what I mean? I prefer balance over, you know, being number one in one thing and being, you know, number 19
exactly.
in something else. You know what I mean? Balance is just more important to me than that. But I don't think there's anything Boston Celtics fans can really complain about this season, even with embarrassing games like Chicago, even with some of the things that, you know, the rotation and some of the things that happened, you know, that have happened in the season. He's done everything right so far, and I think this game is just another example of a game that could have been, you know, a bad game for them. They got some lucky breaks with, you know, with Jokic not being in, with Paul Millsap being out. But, you know, this game could have easily been bad with the games that that Gary Harris in Murray had. I mean, those could have been, this could have been a really different situation. And at TD Garden, you know, no less. And they still have games against, you know, Western Conference teams coming up in the stretch. So, you know, Brad Stevens, you have to give him kudos for the way that he's, you know, managed the minutes and managed the rotation around these injuries.
Yeah, I wouldn't stress anything, man. Like you said, it's a long season. The Bulls game was our first dud. It's a good bounce back. Then Chicago, not Chicago, Boston let their foot off the gas a little bit in the last 5 minutes. I think they were up by 12 late in the game. You know, it was like five.
They do that a lot, don't they? It seems like they do that a lot, isn't it? That they kind of like they get those double figure leads, you know, somewhere with about 6 or 7 minutes left to go in the game, and they kind of just let their foot off the gas, and the next thing you know, the team is down. You know, their opponents are within 6 or within 4 or something like that, and you know the game becomes interesting. I think they need to keep, you know, the killer instinct, and I didn't mean to cut you off while you're making your point, but I think a lot of that comes from, you know, Brad Stevens. He gets these leads, maybe pulls some of the starters to get, you know, to help them get some of that rest, to keep them under their minutes, under that 30 minutes or around that 30 minute mark. And as they put in their bench players, you know, sometimes that's like taking their foot off the accelerator, and sometimes those leads get lost.
I would agree with you if tonight he didn't bring the starters back in. He brought in Jaylen and I think Tatum in late. He brought them back in to close the game down. So that's where
out of necessity, probably.
Oh no! This is before the lead was before they lost the lead. You know what I'm saying? I was watching.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, they were handling it comfortably, and then Gary Harris and Jamal Murray kind of went bonkers. So, you know, and that's just it happens, man. It's a win is a win. The only thing that concerns me, like I said, that overall the defense has really slipped. And it is what it is, man. We are depending on guys who, you know, just last year were in college. You know, and like Semi Ojeleye right now has no confidence in his shot. He was 0-4 tonight. He's getting good shots, and those same shots that he was draining, like, you know, like he was in a video game early in the season, he's bricking them left and right. He's spraying everywhere. So, it'll happen. It'll come. My main thing is, you know, Al Horford is, I think, arguably the team's best player, and he's obviously, I think, he's their best all-around defender. So without him in there, you know, it does change things. Like a lot of guys, Aaron Baines tries his best, but Baines just can't move his feet. He can't move his feet fast enough. So guys are beating him to the rim and quick shotting him at the rim. It happens because if you're just talking about one-on-one post defense, he's great. But when you give him space a little bit and guys can get him going left and right and, you know, hit him with the move, he's going to be toast. Tice is a lot better, and Tice did a really good job when he came in. And that's why, and honestly, this game, the plus-minus, it indicates the flow. We brought Tice and Larkin in, and they basically put the clamps on a lot of the stuff that Denver was doing.
Yeah.
And then at the other end, they were punishing them on offense. So, it's a good win. The thing to look out for, though, Kenneth Faried is a decent player. He's been in and out of the rotation for Denver, and there's talk of him being on the trade block. Another big moment of the game, Trey Lyles, he posterized our rookie, Jason Tatum. He dunked him back to Duke. I don't know if you play yet. He came. Hey, Tatum was
– It's going to happen, though. It's going to happen. It happens to the best of them. I mean
– It was vicious, man. We're going to see it on SportsCenter for the next couple weeks because Tatum was deeming him one-on-one straight up, and Trey Lyles gave him a little jab step, 2 or 3 hard dribbles to the left, and he goes up with the right. and just dunked on his head. Not only did he dunk on him, but then he hung on the ring and swung over Tatum's head.
He gave him the balls over the head move. Oh no!
He did, man. He gave him the flyover, man.
Oh no! You never want to see that happen, but you know I have to give you credit though, Snotty. I've never heard someone deliver a hot take with such a calm and just conversational manner that you just did. You just slipped in and said Al Horford is the Boston Celtics' best player, which I'm not even going to argue with you. I'm not going to argue with you about it. Maybe I will, but I think that if you ask 99% of Boston Celtics fans, and granted, a lot of fans for every team, and not just the Boston, but a lot of fans are hype beasts. They like to get into, you know, whoever's the guy that has the sneakers, whoever's the guy that has, you know, the funny commercials that, you know, dressing up like old men, the Uncle Drew things, you know, you reach, you teach young fellow, you know, whatever. You know, they get into that hype piece. But I think if you ask even the informed Boston Celtics fans if who's the Boston Celtics best player, I just can't see them saying, you know, voting against Kyrie Irving. I just don't see it. But you slipped it in there without even making it seem like it was anything else. You slipped it in there so matter of fact. I just had to applaud you on that because that was pretty slick. I like that. I like the delivery. It was a hot take without really being hot. You know what I'm saying?
I feel no.
My only thing, and I'm gonna finish this. I didn't mean to cut you off. My only thing is the one thing about Al Horford is that as much as he's the lubricant, like you said, the lubricant, the lubricator, whatever. I mean, is as much as I wouldn't go for that nickname personally, the lubricator. But you know, as a lubrication, he's fantastic at lubricating and keeping the gears turning. But I don't think that he's for the third max guy on this team. He can't take over and shoulder the burden like Kyrie Irving can and like I think Gordon Hayward would be able to.
This is my problem with that. Because, like, all right, so are you saying then that Jamal Crawford was the best player on the Clippers? You know what I'm saying? Just because you can score really well. And look, I'm not saying Kyrie is Jamal Crawford. He's a way better player than Jamal Crawford. He's an excellent player in his own right. But there's two sides of the ball, and we know that Kyrie, while he does try on defense, he's not a great defender. He's been a very good quality defender, and in the scheme, he does what he's supposed to do. But Al Horford is back there blocking shots, switching down the perimeter, guarding guards. And then offensively, not only is he making shots, he's making the plays. Kyrie is allowed – sure, he's doing exactly what he's asked him. He's averaging 6 assists a game. He's wonderful. I'm not saying anything bad about Kyrie. But then Al Horford is he's the quarterback of that offense and defense, you know. So I get it. Kyrie puts up the glamour numbers. He puts up the big stats and gets the big shots, and it's beautiful. It's great. But if you look at everything that – like, look tonight. We gave up 118 to a Nuggets team that, you know, is missing their two best players. And, you know, they came back. He means so much to the foundation of that defense. And at the same time, he makes an offense go – again, I'm telling you, I said I give 30% of what Isaiah Thomas did to Al Horford last season. Because Al Horford knows just how to set the right screen. He knows just what to roll. He does so much on offense that goes unnoticed. When he's off the floor, things really grind to a halt. They really struggle without him on the floor, or they just get by. So I get it. You know, if we're talking about who's going to get the max contract, who's the best player, the numbers look like Kyrie. People chant, you know, MVP for Kyrie Irving because, you know, he does have the heroics. He has a big – but how do we get to that point where he can do the heroics? It's because of the things that Al Horford does. So I think this team would survive long – like, let's say, like, who got hurt for 2 weeks and you had to – how the team would do without him. They would do better without Kyrie for 2 weeks than they would without Al Horford. I think it would really struggle with –
Snotty, man, I wanted to let this one go, and I am going to let this one go until you said that, and now I just wanted – because I was just about to say if you had to pick which player was going to be out for the long term and how the Celtics would do if Al Horford went out for an extended period versus if Kyrie went out for extended period, how would the team fare? And all I'm going to say, and then we got to get – because we do have callers. We see you, Vinny in Saugus, lighting up the call lines. We see a couple of other callers that have dialed the greats.com call lines at 347-215-7771. But if you look at it, Snotty, Kyrie Irving was out against – the worst team in the league, and the Boston Celtics without Horford as their best player, got blown out
of
the gym.
Are we using one game? Hold on. Are we going to use one game?
No.
Hold on.
You're right.
Are we using one game?
You're true. No, you're right. You're right. There should be a bigger sample size, but, I mean, it's still, like you said, it's still a short season, and we haven't, you know, seen everything. It's just one evidence, you know what I mean? We're not going to resolve this issue. We're not going to resolve the disagreement. And to be honest with you, I see a lot of merit in what you're saying. I don't disagree with about 90% of what you're saying until you said that the Boston Celtics could survive better over a 2-week stretch with Kyrie Irving out than with Al Horford out. But like I said, you know, you have a valid point. I was going to let it go. I shouldn't have even kept going because we have the callers on the line. We definitely want to get to the callers, and I still got to do the read also. But absolutely valid point. As a matter of fact, we might want to just stick with that point because we have Vinny and Saugus, a regular caller, who always brings some awesome insight and some awesome discussion to the CLNS Media postgame show, which is sponsored by Greats.com and also sponsored by CLNSmedia.com, the brand new CLNS Media website, up to date for the 21st century, for 2018, brand new for 2018. Vinny and Saugus, what do you think about this conversation? We'll get to the game in general, you know, a little bit in a couple of seconds. But what do you think to start off about this conversation that Snotty and I are having as to who the Boston Celtics would fare better without, or who the Boston Celtics would miss more if given an extended injury? Would the Boston Celtics do better without Al Horford, if Al Horford were to get injured and they had to rely strictly on Kyrie Irving, or would they do better, God forbid, of course, any injury, or would they do better if Kyrie Irving, you know, God forbid, got injured and Al Horford were their main guy, were the main guy that the Boston Celtics had to depend on? Who do you think the Boston Celtics need more?
I just came on because I wanted to talk about why I want to reinstitute the monarchy. I don't know what the heck you guys are talking about. but that was a great conversation you guys are having. I wouldn't mind being held on hold to hear you guys talk about it, because that was a very nice little debate you guys were having. But I think the Celtics, I think I flip-flop on this a lot. I think Al Horford is our best player, but I think the Celtics would be – hey, I'm with you, Snotty. But I think the Celtics would be better off
if
Horford was hurt. I think the Celtics would be fine if Horford was hurt and Kyrie was playing, because Kyrie, you know, he can get to you that 20 points and he can carry the offense. And he's a really good creator now, where he wasn't really in Cleveland. He could be the straw that stirs the drink at times. And you kind of get those games every 2-3 games where Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are clicking on all cylinders, and that helps the offense mightily. And I think with Horford, one of his biggest drawbacks is once out of every 5 or 6 games, he'd have a very blah box score of like 8 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and you go, "Oh, all right. I guess it's one of those nights where you say he did the little things, you know, that mattered. But you need to do the superficial things too. You need to score, and that's what I'll say about Al Horford. I think he is
Body
the best
with the,
player.
Al Horford is our best player. Now you're gonna come in and back up the Kyrie Irving." statement. That's good. I need somebody on my side, and we'll leave it at that because we don't got much more time than that. So I'm going to have to cut Vinny off a little bit early and then get you in there, because we definitely got to get Isaiah in the show. The Isaiah moment is, you know what I'm saying, is just an integral part of the show at this point. So once they're done talking to each other about the about how good Al Horford is or whatever, we're going to get right to you, okay?
All right. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. Hello?
I don't know what's happening. What's up, man? Did we lose him?
No, hey.
Yo. What up?
Hey,
Vinny, you there?
You have me? Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
Yes.
I got
Yo.
You.
Oh, okay. Sorry for shouting. That's all I know how to do when I lose reception on the phone is, I guess, scream. So that's all I got. So what's up?
I think what's happening, not to interrupt, Vinny, I don't know. Sometimes the Blog Talk Radio interface, there's a screen room. So when callers call in, the host can talk to people that are calling in, you know what I mean, without being heard on the air. But sometimes those conversations, sometimes the lines get crossed in the digital world of the interwebs, and sometimes some things, you know, leak onto the air for some reason, and sometimes stuff that's on the air leaks into the screening room. So, you know, not to belabor, you know, not to go into the weeds about how the interface works and stuff like that, but sometimes there's technical difficulties and sometimes we have to work through them. But we still have you there, Vinny. Snotty, do we still have you hanging in there?
Yeah, man.
All right, so we can continue the discussion. Everybody's still here.
All right, cool. Yeah, I don't understand this.
Let me ask you guys a question. You're saying every now and then Al Horford has a blog game, and you know, scoring wise, you're right. He'll have one of those games where he just doesn't have it, that game for whatever. He's 32 now? Al's 32?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's legs just aren't there. Whatever. How many games this season? Kyrie's played 27 games. How many games do you think he scored under 20 points?
I'm going to go half.
No, God.
Half.
You think he scored under 20 in half of his games?
That's rough. That's a tough stat.
That's rough. That's
I'm going
off
memory here. I'm going off memory here.
What do you think? How many games? How many
games? Asking me for another? Okay. Just under a dozen.
Oh, wow. You guys are underselling Kyrie. Are y'all sure you think he's that great? He's only scored
under 20. I thought you were talking about Al Horford. You mean Kyrie Irving? Most of his games he scored over 20, but that would be me. I don't know. Has he not scored that much?
I said Kyrie, yeah. He's only scored under 20 in 7 of the 27 games he's really played in. In fact, 26 games is the one game he got busted in the face, and he only played like a minute and a half. So that game doesn't even count. So 26 games, and only 7 he hasn't scored 20 or more.
Hmm.
But my point is this, that even in those games, let's see what the record was in those games. They're actually really – like they're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So they're 6-2. When he doesn't score over 20. So I get it. Like, it's great that Kyrie can score. When we need a bucket, you're getting a bucket from Kyrie. That's awesome. But Boston also has a system in place that, like, we watch that ball move is something beautiful. And we got shot makers and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown who can take on, like, I think you both probably agree. If you put Jason Tatum on like, a bad team, like most rookies are, on a bad, like a blue chip rookie on a bad team, he would score 20 points a game this first year, right? You guys agree with that?
There's some really bad teams out there, man. You put him on Orlando,
put,
I don't know.
Like, look, if you put him, you had him on Orlando right now, or that's not even a good example because they look pretty good early. But, like, you know, if you get drafted by a terrible team as a rookie and you're a good rookie, you're going to put up big numbers and your team's going to be bad, right? And that's what Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are capable of that. They're not doing it because they play for a good team that runs a good system and have other good players. So my point is, let's say Kyrie sprains his ankles out for 3 weeks. You would just get a little more usage for Jason Brown. Not just. I mean, it'd be tough, obviously, to replace 26, 27 points a game. But now Jaylen Brown gets more opportunities. Jason Tatum gets more opportunities. Al Horford now is, you know, he picked teams apart from the post even more. You know, so I get what you're saying. I just think that the offense would take less of a hit than we think. While I think the defense would fall straight into the toilet if Al Horford misses 3 weeks.
I think, like, our spacing and our defense would take a massive hit if Horford was gone. I think, like, Kyrie, given our depth, like, you know, when you look at the depth chart, like, oh, we're looking at Shane Larkin for 25 minutes. We're looking at Marcus Smart for 28 minutes. It hurts. It's like I grimace at the idea of not having Kyrie for like 2 weeks. I hear your point, and you make some great points. It's just I think that when I look at Horford, I say, okay, well, we can probably be fine with Aaron Baines or Cease and hang in there. And I think we could still be creative with the lineup, but if you don't have a guard that can score in this league, you're in a lot of trouble, because every team that is good has a guard that can score. And if we just have an offensive liability on the floor, you know, Marcus, then we're in a lot of trouble.
Forgetting the awesomeness of Scary Terry, right? I mean, you get more time for Scary Terry. He gets a better rhythm. He can score. So I think you can't replace Kyrie, but you can survive his absence just because of the depth on the perimeter. While Al Horford is one of one in what he does as far as not just rebounding and scoring, but like the passing, the screen setting up top. I really think, without him, this team is like, look, we had him 2 years ago, right? And that team last year took off the way it did. He was the only real addition, right? Al Horford in the summer. He was a big addition.
Gerald Green.
Jerry G.
That's
the playoff series.
They're both very valuable, obviously. That's why they're both making the big money. And so Kyrie stays around forever and takes it, you know, in 2 years gets his big contract with Boston too. They both play their positions. I just think Al Horford on both, sure, he doesn't mean as much offensively as Kyrie does, but defensively it would look I think we'd be one of the worst. I mean, we're already down at 19 right now. So imagine I don't know.
Nah. I think you're right, actually. Yeah, I'm on your side now. Yeah, you got me.
Yeah.
You got me, Snotty. But, you know, I still don't know what to do when it comes time to vote for MVP and who to put, you know, because, like, I'm just going to regret the decision whenever I do it. Like, like Kyrie or Horford, like, I'm going to regret whoever I pick.
But Vinny. And Snotty, the fantastic thing is, and just like the debate between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, we don't have to pick. We as fans get to watch these guys. Al Horford still has 2 years on his contract after this. I think Kyrie has a year or two left. You know, Jaylen Brown Jason Tatum both have 3 or 4 years. 2 years. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum both have. I believe. What is it, 2 years for Jaylen and 3 years for Jason Tatum? We don't have to, you know, choose between those guys. The Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier debate is getting interesting because Marcus Smart is coming up on free agency. But with these other guys, we don't have to make that decision. It's a luxury that we can have this debate about who is the most important player to the Boston Celtics between Al Horford and Kyrie Irving, because they're both fantastic players. And with that said, we do have another longtime caller on the line. So, Vinny, I want to get your final thoughts before we go to our next caller. Well, give us something to close out on.
Okay. So next game is against the Jazz, I believe, on the 15th, and then we have a back-to-back in Memphis. So this is the really tough parts of the season where you have, like, what, 10 games in 12 days or whatever horrible part of the schedule we have to deal with here.
Okay,
so I think
days.
That, yeah. So, yeah. So it's going to be rough. And I think that the Celtics' defensive drop from first to 19 has a lot to do with Al Horford, Marcus Morris not being in. And if we can get Morris back healthy and Horford's fine, we'll be okay. But I'll close out on this. I really want to win against the Jazz on the 15th, because I don't think we're winning against Memphis on the 16th, even though they're sliding. We always had trouble playing there, and even without Mike Conley, I still am scared to go there, because I think Stevens is going to rest one of his guys, and maybe he should rest one of his guys. All right, you can mute me now.
You can mute me now. I like that. Listen, Vinny and Saugus, we always appreciate your call. You always bring some fantastic insight and knowledge of the game of basketball and of the Boston Celtics in particular. We love having you on the show. As always, please call back every chance you get, every time you get the wild hair up your ass to, you know, dial up the number and call in the Boston Celtics postgame show. Please do so, because we love to have you on. And with that, we're going to go to another longtime caller, frequent, a longtime listener, frequent caller who always brings – the Heat, who always brings the insight and the perspective. And screening his call, he seemed to disagree with Snoddy's take that Al Horford is the best player on the Boston Celtics roster. But, of course, bringing in my man Isaiah from Jersey, I got to give him his intro music. Not sure if you'll like this one, but he's going to get it anyway. Isaiah in Jersey. Intro music and all.
What's going on, brother? What's that, the mask off remix? How's everything with you fellas?
There you go. It's not the remix. It's they don't actually have a commercially released instrumental. So I found somebody somebody on YouTube that just remade it. So it's kind of the bootleg mask off instrumental.
It worked.
There you go. Take the mask off. Let them know what you're thinking, Isaiah.
What's going on, Snoddy? How's everything with you?
What up? Good.
All right, man. Nothing much, man. You know, great Celtic win. I love everything that they did tonight, you know, without Al, you know, we were able to rally the troops and get the victory, you know. But you caught my attention with that, man, with that comment, that hot take, like you said.
He tried to sneak it in.
I mean, it was so subtle. I like the way you did that, man, but
Snoddy, how is better than Kyrie?
Was that? You were breaking up, man.
I mean, that's just sad to disagree with you simply for the reason that I think that Kyrie is what, top five, top six, top ten player in the league. And absolutely, I mean, this is no way, shape, or form saying that Al is a great player or a good player. He's a really good player, really, really, really good player. You know, he helps the offense, he moves the offense, but I think your take is a little bit, a lot of the national take. Like when I listen to a lot of shows and a lot of people talk, it's like, how are you not getting that MVP consideration? Because everyone's saying that he had Al. And I agree, Al does help in the, like, I think you got maybe make a new position. He does help, he helps everything run smoothly. But Kyrie sets the pace, he's the thermometer of the team, and I think that although he's not as good a two-way player as all of the players, I don't in no way is as good an offensive player as Kyrie. I mean, Kyrie just drank.
Isaiah.
He figures out. Yes.
Hey, man,
Isaiah,
you bringing
up for Isaiah, real quick. You sound like you're driving through the Lincoln Tunnel or something like that. You sound like one of those don't smoke commercials where the old bald lady puts a little machine up to her throat and don't smoke because you can't sing bedtime stories to your children. Is your phone? Are you in a Walmart with a tin roof or something like that? What's going on with your phone, brother?
Yeah, I was walking around for a bit, but I'm steady now.
We got you back. There we go. Finish your point. I heard you say top five, six players in the league in referring to Kyrie Irving. So start back from there.
I think Kyrie's a top five to top six to top ten player in the league. And although Al is really, really, really good, I mean, I don't think that Al's that type of player that you can put him up there with the likes of Kyrie or the likes of Curry or the likes of Harden. I don't think Al's that kind of player that you can say – that he's even in those guys' class. I mean, I've seen Al disappear in playoff games. I've seen Al disappear when it counts, and I've never seen Kyrie disappear. I mean, and I know you're saying and you're attributing it to Al being a better defensive player or a better two-way player, but I would say as good as you think Al is on defense is as great as I think Kyrie is on offense. I mean, he just sets the pace of the team. He's the thermometer of the team. And if you look at him, he looks like a Porsche or a Ferrari that's going the speed limit. I mean, at any time, he could just look off and do whatever he wants. But he's playing a controlled game this year that he hasn't played in the other years simply because he hasn't had to because he had LeBron on the team. I mean, I love Al.
I'll just say this real quick. Last year against Golden State, 8-for-23, 19 points, and a 19-point loss.
Yeah, but I can pull up numerous games with Al.
Are we using one game, Snoddy?
Hold on. Does he disappear or not? I have never heard him disappear. I just say he disappears. just one game.
Which one is it?
All
right. Well, what I'm going to say is this. Can you name another one?
I mean, you want me to go find some more? We could obviously find more.
I mean, you
no
have to find it. Yeah, that,
my,
like
my,
I'm sure they're all
ball
players. They're all ball players. And I'm sure that you can. I'm sure that you got to go look. But off the top of your dome, can you think of another one?
I mean, again, no player is perfect, and you can say that. Sure, Al Horford's never going to be a guy you just give the ball to give me 25. You can't do it.
Exactly.
That's just not who he is.
So at the end of the day, in the NBA, the number one thing that you got to do
basketball than you're scoring. The day that we can all agree and we get to the point where people stop glorifying scorers to the way we do, I will be happy. Because sure, Kyrie's great. He's amazing. To say he's the top 5-10 player in the league because he can score great, because he doesn't play. His defense has been so much better this year. But even look, you know what? I'm gonna say this, and people might get mad. A big reason that Boston slipped as much as they have defensively, Kyrie's starting to regress.
It's because
back
to Kyrie.
Where
he was. Yeah, lately, I'm agree with you. Lately, after the losing streak, Kyrie has been trailing. He's been dying on screens, and when he gets around the screen, he's running sideways or parallel to the defender instead of getting his body in front. I see that. I mean, that's definitely in there. But if you watch ball like you do, you know that you got to pace yourself, especially when you're going as hard as you do on the offense. So, a lot of players on the Celtics right now are pacing themselves on the defensive end. A lot of them are holding back. So Kyrie's not the only one. I can even point out some times where Al does it. Al was just in the game against Chicago and let two power forwards go off on him.
Homeboy just said it, though. Al, he doesn't think Al was healthy. You know what I'm saying? And, like, just a fluke game. Again, we're using one game. A fluke game where, like, Bobby Porter.
Well, we're using one-on-one. No, it's not. It's a one-on-one, though. Because Al played last night. Kyrie didn't play tonight. Kyrie played tonight. So it's a one-on-one. You could use the last two games because Al just played and Kyrie just played. And you can see the difference in the team. It's not just the scoring.
That's what I said.
It's how he's playing point guard. He's playing point guard this year. And you can't take that away from him and just say he's just scoring. No, he's setting the team up. You said Mark is getting a lot of hockey.
Let me ask you this. Who's leading the team assists right now?
Al Horford.
Is it Al?
It's Al.
Five
to Kyrie's four. Yep.
Okay. I'm not denying that. I'm not saying that Al isn't a major contributor to the team. What we're talking about is Kyrie is who is the better player. And if you're just taking it away
it's
from the team, and
that's fine.
No way.
I don't mind you guys being wrong. I don't mind you guys being wrong. This is America. You have the right to be incorrect. And so it's fine. I'm not gonna argue with
as you are proving right now. As you are clearly proving, there is no way that Al's better than him. No way.
If you watch the game,
Al is an integral part. But if you take Al off this team for an extended amount of time, I think we could cobble up enough players
win. That's it. That's fine. You're wrong. And I don't think so.
How many games has Al missed this year?
Let's see. Well, I do know last year when he was out with that concussion, the team looked like trash.
I'm not talking about that. That's the Isaiah Thomas team. I'm talking about the Kyrie team. How many games has he been out this year?
Oh, I've only missed like two games.
He missed two games. And
like two
out
or
of
three
the
games,
small
yeah.
sample size that we have, how did the team look when he wasn't there? Did they look – I mean, to me tonight, the only thing that we suffered on was on the defensive end, and that's what Al is, and on the rebounding. That's what Al comes in.
They barely beat Charlotte, and they beat the Lakers by 11. So, I mean, like, it doesn't matter.
And then tonight, right?
I mean, and then they let
then
Gary
then tonight,
Harris –
so we're 3-0 without him. And in the one game that Al was there and Kyrie wasn't there, we got run off the court by the worst team in the league, dude.
Hold on. But do you remember when Kyrie got – are we going to ignore how Kyrie – he missed the Charlotte game and he missed the game after, and they went 2-0. That was during the streak, right?
Okay,
you don't remember that?
You jog my memory on
it's
that.
It's crazy how all of a sudden your memory just goes blank about certain things when
you
don't
like
want to hear.
Like I said, you jog my memory. It's not like that. We can have a conversation. I can admit when I'm wrong about something. But what I'm saying is Kyrie is the point guard of the team, and he's the one that gauges the temperature of the team, and he gives us what we need when we need it. And at times
Absolutely.
I've watched Al when we needed certain things, and Al isn't. When we go to Al and we need it, I don't necessarily see Al get that basket like that. I might see him. I mean,
yes.
Let me stop.
You know what
it's
called?
I don't want to start picking apart. I don't. Let me
This is called confirmation bias, because Al Horford has been outstanding when the team has needed him in the fourth quarter of the season. But because you don't want to, you already in your head believe that he's not, you just don't even see it. Just the same way you just
that's
told me
not,
just now.
That's not true.
Hold on. Let me jump in real quick. I want to say something, though. If the team needs Al Horford in the fourth quarter, it's usually because Al Horford wasn't performing in the previous three quarters. He's had duds of quarters where he hasn't put anything up, like in the Detroit game where he was pulled all game, but he did something in the fourth quarter, which is important. But it wouldn't have been a close game if he hadn't been pulled for the first three quarters.
Kyrie Irving got shut down by Bradley. Don't put that on anybody else.
He did. That's why we lost that Detroit game. Couldn't be Kyrie.
Horford wasn't fantastic throughout the entirety of that game either.
Don't put that on Al Horford.
What I'm going to ask you is this, Snotty. In those games that you said Al hit those big fourth quarter shots, who did the assist come from?
Not from Kyrie.
What do you mean? When he's hitting the corner threes, that's not coming from a post up, though. A lot of those plays you're talking about are coming off of the jump shot, right? They're not coming off of isolation or anything like that.
They got a great two-man game. You're right. I'm not going to say
exactly.
Kyrie's look.
That's coming off of Kyrie creating. That's coming off of Kyrie creating.
No, it's not. It's a great conversation. And
what do you mean, it's not? Somebody's got to throw him in. You got to break down the D and throw him the ball.
Okay. So, good talk. We disagree, obviously, but you're not changing my mind. I know basketball. I know what I'm talking about. You guys love the scoring. I love the real basketball players. That's all good. It's all good.
That's not a fair statement to make, because Kyrie is a hell of a player, brother.
What are you talking about?
Like, you acting like Kyrie is smoking mirrors. He's the real deal. He's the best player the Celtics have had in forever.
Great score.
Like, I can't remember the last time a player has been on his level as a basketball player.
And you're
downgrading him and saying that he's a scorer? No, man, you're not
scorer.
Watching it. If you're saying you're a basketball junkie and you know your ball,
I'm not saying
you
I'm
can
a basketball
recognize
anything.
The difference between last year and this year's Kyrie and understand the difference he's making as the engine of this team.
And you're great.
There's no way you can say that he's not.
And he's great. He's actually hurting the defense right now. And if you ignore that,
he's human, like you said. But there's no way that he's not a great player.
Al is a really good all-around player, and your boy is a really good scorer.
Is a great savant at this game called basketball.
Let me ask this though, and I don't want to take sides because you guys are obviously playing the pros and the cons of each side, you know, perfectly well. You don't need me to jump in, but which player is going to make? It's possible they both make it, but which player is going to make the All-Star game for the Boston Celtics this year? Which has a more likely chance? And I'm not talking about if you excluded fan voting, because I think fan voting is bullshit.
Yeah,
but if you had actual picks for All-Star, who would get in and who wouldn't? From the people that actually know, from coaches voting, who would vote? Who would get voted into the All-Star game? Kyrie or Al Horford?
They are both going to make it. I don't know why.
Yeah, both of them will make it.
They're both going to make it.
Yeah, they'll both make it, but I'm saying if there was only one, who would make it? If
why
the coaches voted,
about
since we're talking about you know ladder. Credibility of people's opinions, if the coaches voted, who would they vote to
they
put in there? Who do you think? Who do the analysts that are actually respected? Like I don't know who you guys respect as analysts. Let's say Bob Ryan. Who would Bob Ryan, for example, say is the best
Bob
player
Ryan.
On the Boston Celtics roster? Kyrie Irving or Horford?
I think
Mike Gorman, you know what I'm saying? Like any of these guys.
I get what you're trying to do. I get what you're trying to do, but I think that analysts understand how much Al Horford is worth to this team too. I'm not saying like he's
– Oh, absolutely.
It's not a zero-sum game. No, I'm
going
to say both. They're both of them. They're both great, and the team is leading the East. There's no way he leaves either one off. They're both making it.
But, Scotty, let me ask you this. Who is the clutch player of the two?
The clutch player? I mean, if that's all you care about, I mean, then sure.
That's just an added stat that I'm throwing on top of it. That's not all I care about. That's
one element to the argument.
Factor. That's another point. That's a deciding factor in the argument. I've seen a guy on the highest stage give up three buckets and win a game for the Kings.
You know what the argument is? It's like if you try to tell me the earth is flat, I know the earth's not flat, so whatever you say doesn't really matter to me. I know for a fact Al Horford is the most important player.
Now we know why you don't like Kyrie Irving as the best player on the Boston Celtics. You had to go to that flat Earth stuff, Snotty. Listen. We've gone over on time, but of course it's still recording for the podcast. So for the listeners on iTunes and Stitcher, they can continue listening to this riveting debate about who is the best player on the Boston Celtics, Kyrie Irving or Al Horford. But we're running out of time, and we still got to get the read in and close out the show. So what I want to do is, without anybody talking over anybody else, without any, you know, any contention,
I think it's all in good fun.
Let's get the final word from each one of you guys. Starting with Isaiah, because you're the guest.
I want to hear your closing argument,
and then I want to hear Snotty Dripper's closing argument. I ain't gonna say shit, so y'all close it out, Isaiah. Finish out your point as to why Isaiah. Just put it all out there, and you know what I'm saying. A minute or two, and then we'll get to Snotty as to why Al Horford is the best player in a minute or two, and then we'll finish out the rest of the show with the reads and the rest of it.
Hey, I think Al's a great player. I think he really fits into Brad Stevens' system really well. It highlights a lot of the things that he does. But at the end of the day, I think that, you know, if you took a consensus, it's not just my opinion. I'm not trying to sway you, Snotty, at all. But I think Kyrie's the better player. I've seen him do it on the highest stage against MVP caliber players. I've seen, like, Al Horford have his Tristan Thompson issue. So with that being said, I think Kyrie's the better player.
Snotty? Well, I don't know. It looks like Snotty dropped. So, Isaiah, you still with me?
Yes, sir.
All righty. Final thoughts about the game since Snotty apparently dropped. I don't think he hung up because I know Snotty Drippin doesn't back down from a debate like that. And it was a fantastic debate despite some minor talk over, which, you know, is fun for me to listen to, but, you know, doesn't always make for the best radio. But that's okay because you guys are getting into it. And it just shows the Celtics fan base is not only informed but
passionate.
So, you're passionate, absolutely. You're all passionate about it. I happen to fall on your side. I just think that I don't know how you can deny Kyrie Irving as that player. But that's not to say that Al Horford isn't a fantastic, glue guy. He's a fantastic, you know, guy that keeps the gears, you know, turning. He's the guy that facilitates everything. He rebounds. He plays defense. He, you know, he can score in the post. He can shoot from three. He can pass the ball like. Probably the best passing big man in the league. He is the best passing big man. Not probably. He is the best passing big man in the league. So he does all the success not
Denver
to negate any of that. It's just I think that Kyrie Irving, without him, if you left Kyrie Irving off the roster for the entire season, you're not going to get, you know what I'm saying, you would get fewer wins than if you left Al Horford off the roster for the entire season. If it was Kyrie and nobody else and just the rest of the roster minus Al Horford, or Al Horford minus Kyrie with the rest of the roster, that Kyrie-led team is going to be a better team. But maybe I'm wrong, because if you look at Kyrie earlier in his career, he didn't do very much before LeBron James got there, so there's an argument to be made on both sides. But final thoughts about the game, Isaiah? Anything you'd like to add about this win against the Denver Nuggets?
It was nice to get back on track tonight against Denver. I think the roles were all messed up without Kyrie being in there against Chicago. It was one of those games, like Snotty said, where things are going to happen. You're going to get a couple clunkers during the NBA season. And it was nice to get back on track tonight, you know, against Denver, and go Celtics.
Definitely. As always, appreciate Isaiah in New Jersey calling. Usually calls after every show. Haven't heard from him in the past couple of shows. I can see why he wouldn't want to call in after the Chicago Bulls disaster, but it's nice to hear from Isaiah in New Jersey, as well as Vinny and Saugus, both fantastic callers, regular listeners, CLNS Media diehards. And with that, just to get a couple of things out of the way, pay some bills, this episode is sponsored by Greats.com, makers of the all-time greats, classic, stylish, and comfortable sneakers sold at a great price. Greats is Brooklyn's first sneaker company. They sell all the greats, classic styles, made the best for less. They have a wide selection of both men's and women's shoes. Versatile styles suitable for any occasion. Tons of different colors and materials to choose from. Their best sellers include the all leather, and this is high quality leather, folks, the all leather Royale lace up, and my personal favorite, because I just don't like to tie my shoes, even when I have laces on them, I don't tie them, I leave them tied loosely and then just slide them on because I'm just that lazy. The Wooster slip-on. So if you're like me and you don't want to tie your shoes, the Royale lace-up ain't for you, try the Wooster slip-on. And as always, you can check those out along with tons of other styles at greats.com. And we've got a special deal for our audience, those of you that listen to the CLNS Media Postgame Show faithfully. You can save $15 on your first order with our offer code CelticsRoundTable. All you got to do is go to greats.com, that's greats.com, and be sure to enter CelticsRoundTable to save 15% at checkout. Greats also believe so much in their shoes that they offer a no-miss. You can't miss with Greats, of course. A no-risk return and exchange policy to guarantee that you get the right fit in a style you love. So if you order, if you go into greats.com, if you order your shoes, you pick out the Royale lace-up, the Wooster slip-on, and one of the other fantastic styles for men and women, you put in the promo code Celtics Roundtable and save 15% on those sneakers, they arrive at your house and you just don't like them, they don't fit, for whatever reason, they're just not your thing, they guarantee their product 100%. You can return them and get your money back because there is no risk involved going for these fantastic sneakers from greats.com. We want to thank Greats, as always, for sponsoring this podcast. Without fantastic sponsors like Greats and greats.com, we wouldn't have the postgame show for you, the loyal listeners and fans of the Boston Celtics, after every single Boston Celtics game. And with that said, we'd like to thank those listeners once again, Vinny in Saugus and Isaiah in New Jersey, for calling in and sharing their hot takes, getting heated with my co-host, James Hollis, a.k.a. Snotty Drippin'. Don't know what happened to him. Seems like his call dropped in the middle of the debate, but I know that wasn't anything personal. I know it wasn't running from the debate. So, Snotty, big shout-out to you. It's always a pleasure to work with you on these post-game shows, and I look forward to working with you again. Also like to give a big shout-out to the founder of CLNS Media, Nick Gelso, the man with the plan, who has just launched the brand new CLNSmedia.com website, new and improved for the 2018, even though you can check it out right now early in December of 2017. A brand new website for CLNS Media, no longer CLNS Radio, but CLNS Media. We'd also like to thank the executive producer of the CLNS Media content, Larry H. Russell, and of course the new coordinator, of the boss, the CLNS Radio, CLNS Media, Boston Celtics postgame show, Bobby Manning, who's doing a fantastic job balancing not only his schedule at Syracuse University as a young major, I'm sure in some type of communications, journalism, or broadcasting, but who is also scheduling all of your hosts, finding talent for this show, the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show, and scheduling us all to make sure that you get not only the best in coverage for the Boston Celtics, but also a diversity of opinion, as you got to witness tonight on the show with the disagreements, the lighthearted and very cordial disagreements that both Snotty Drippin and I, Nick Sesento, had, as well as with our faithful listeners, Isaiah. Vinny was pretty easygoing, so you know, no argument there. But once again, would love to thank Snotty Pippen. Big shout out to CLNS Media. Join us again Friday as the CLNS Media postgame show returns after a game against the Utah Jazz. Your host will be Sam Sheehan, and I'm sure they'll find somebody else to go along with Sam Sheehan, but anybody that co-hosts with Sam Sheehan will make a good show, because any show hosted by Sam Sheehan is fantastic. And with that, we'd like to wish all the Celtics fans out there a wonderful evening. Thank you for listening. Please continue to tune in to CLNS Media for all of your Boston Celtics and sports needs. Have a good one, ladies and gentlemen.
is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
There had never been a sneaker brand founded in Brooklyn, which was really surprising. Like, everything came from here at one point, but never a sneaker company. So here we are. For value and quality, and we're able to offer a premium quality product at a value price by not wholesaling. It was becoming really clear that like the model of traditional wholesale was completely broken, and basically because of the inefficiency, like the customer pays more money than they need to. So we have two categories, made in Italy and made in Asia. And made in Asia is more sporty, younger, more accessibly priced, and made in Italy is more luxury. We call it accessible aspiration. We use the same factories, the same material providers, the same sole providers as all the luxury brands do. There's one region in Italy where most of the luxury sneakers are made. We make it in that area. This shoe, the upper is premium Italian leather. I mean, it comes from some of the best suppliers in the country. And then we line it with what is called Vachetta calf. And Vachetta calf is what like Chanel makes their bags out of. So actually the lining is more expensive than the leather, which is crazy. And when we went to the factories and we're like, oh, we want to line the whole thing in Vachetta calf, they're like, what? That's kind of what luxury brands do. And we're like, yeah, we know. And they were like, yeah, but you want to price it at this. And I'm like, yeah, but this is how we're going to do it. I know if we cut these things in half, like every other one of our competitors that sells it for $500 is going to basically have the exact same level of material, except this one's going to be $200. And like the simplicity of that sounds like that can't be, that can't be, that can't be, because we're so told like, oh, the more you pay, the better it is. And like that may have been true at some point, but today it's not. And this is kind of proof of that. I mean, there's pros and cons to doing things the way we do it. The pros are we get to give you guys a better product for less. The cons are, you know, it's hard to get more people aware of your brand when you're just one website. By not selling to a retailer, we literally are saving you at least half. Our business couldn't exist pre-internet. Like, the internet is a distribution channel. Like, you can make things and sell it. And if you do that, and that's the majority of your business, and you're not relying on third-party retailers, then you can have a super disruptive business, whatever you're selling. So the internet is the reason. All of those things, man, have changed the world and allow greats to be greats.